Like all of us, writers battle demons. Complicated family relationships, depression, anxiety, and no one understands self-medication better than a writer. Olivia Lang grew up in an alcoholic family. When she was 17, she read Tennessee Williams' play Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, about a dysfunctional, alcohol-ravaged marriage. Williams was an alcoholic himself, and wanting to know more, Lang traveled across America to investigate the lives of six great alcoholic writers. Producer Doug Gordon talked with her about her book, The Trip to Echo Spring, on writers and drinking.
You focus on six American writers, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, Tennessee Williams, John Berryman, John Cheever, and Raymond Carver. Why did you choose these particular six writers?
I knew from the beginning that Tennessee Williams had to be there, that my connection to him and his work was very important. And then I wanted people who had a kind of commonality. I wanted this book to have a coherence and not just be a sort of series of separate portraits. So I needed people who either knew each other, like Hemingway and Fitzgerald knew each other, or people who were interested in each other, like John Berryman was very interested in Ernest Hemingway. He felt that they had things in common and he was fascinated by him. The other thing that's important to say is that I wanted people whose work I genuinely thought was marvellous, because I was going to be drawing out all of these difficult elements of their lives, because I was going to be handling stuff that was so unpleasant, these scenes of real kind of wreckage. I didn't just want to write a hatchet job. I didn't want to write this sort of cruel, exposing book. And I wanted to have that as the kind of antidote. I wanted to be able to present them at their best as well as at their absolute worst.
Mm. Is it possible to say that the six writers you profiled, Fitzgerald, Hemingway, Williams, Berryman, Cheever, and Carver, used alcohol for similar reasons? Or were there any common denominators in the reasons that they drank?
I think there are common denominators, absolutely. The interesting thing, and one of the sort of first myths that I realised wasn't quite true, is that people tend to write drunk. And actually, that happened very rarely. Fitzgerald did it sometimes and often regretted having to do it. But mostly they were using drink for other reasons. And I think I can probably summarise those. Partly it was to do with at the end of a working day. People like Hemingway, for example, like to start drinking as a way of changing the channel, as a way of letting off the pressure of the day, of that sort of incredibly focused work that he was doing, which is something that I'm sure worked very well at the beginning of his life and later on had far bleaker consequences. But then, and much more importantly, I think, there's a way in which drinking was used to self-medication, and you see that with almost all of them. In fact, I think all of them, that they suffered, and often from a very young age, from things like anxiety, social unease, depression. And drinking was, in the beginning, an almost magical key to a more confident, competent, almost weightless self, somebody that wasn't burdened by these feelings that they felt themselves so burdened by. And you see that very clearly with somebody like Tennessee Williams, who used to suffer from really bad panic attacks. He'd often think that he was literally going to go mad from his panic attacks. And of course, his sister did go mad, so it wasn't a sort of a random fear. And once he started drinking, once he got to grips with drinking, he realised that he was this passport out of these terrible feelings that he was experiencing. And the problem with that, of course, is that alcohol is an addictive, poisonous substance. It works very well initially, but because of its effect on the brain adjusts to it. And when you take it away, all of those feelings of anxiety come crowding back, and you need more drink and more drink and more drink to stop it.
Mm-hmm. At one point in the trip to Echo Spring, you write that by traveling through these various locations in sequence, you thought that it would be possible to build a kind of topographical map of alcoholism. And that's such a beautiful, evocative phrase. What do you mean by that, Olivia?
Well, there'd been other books about alcohol and writers, and they tended to be structured in terms of one portrait after another portrait after another portrait. And I noticed that there was a similar trajectory in all of those, that they'd start sort of the early carefree, light-hearted days of drinking, and then gradually the alcoholism would gather and would start becoming much more addictive, much more dangerous, and then you'd end up with these deaths. And I thought, well, if all of these stories have the same arc, then maybe it's the arc that I want to look at. And that's what I tried to do. And I wanted to plot that out across the country. So in New York, I'm looking at these early days of drinking, these sort of intoxicating days of drinking. And as I travel down through New Orleans to Florida, I'm looking much more about the alcoholism as it starts to hit, and Tennessee Williams' last awful years, and what happened to Hemingway, which we all know is just a complete tragedy. I moved on up to St. Paul, and that's really where the book reaches its sort of nadir, is dealing with the poet John Berryman, who committed suicide there. And then I travel on to Port Angeles to really look at the recovery stories of the people who managed to get sober and who managed to draw back these extraordinary second lives. And that's where I handle the material that's about John Cheever, but particularly Raymond Carver.
Mm-hmm. Of the six writers you feature in The Trip to Echo Spring, which writer's story do you think is the most tragic?
Clearly what happened to John Berryman, who ended up killing himself, he committed suicide jumping off a bridge after going through recovery three times and realising he just couldn't find it in himself to get sober. That was a very tragic story. But the one that touched me the most, I think, is Tennessee Williams, who I absolutely adore. And the reason for that is Tennessee, his drinking was in a very bad place, probably by the 60s, maybe even a little earlier. His beloved partner Frank Merlo died of cancer, and after that, I mean, they were estranged anyway before, and after that Tennessee went into what he described as his stoned age, and an inelegant way of putting it is he really lost the plot. And the thing that I find very moving about his life is that he got sober again after that and then carried on drinking again. So he never quite achieved sobriety, but he never stops working. And if you think about Tennessee Williams' life and his body of work, after something like Night of the Iguana, which comes after Cat in the Hat to Move, Streetcar Named Desire, the sort of the big famous plays, his plays become much more difficult. They're damaged by the alcohol he's been taking. And the critics hate them. The critics absolutely savage him. His plays start failing, audiences drop off. He really goes through these serial humiliations, and he never stops writing. He gets up every morning, he drinks his black coffee, he sits down at the typewriter, and he works. And there's something about that work ethic, there's something about that desire to create, despite how agonizing he's finding the experience of his creation's recognition, that I found really deeply moving.
Mm-hmm. Did you uncover any evidence, Olivia, that as his later plays met with the poor reviews, did he drink more heavily?
His drinking, yeah, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And he knew even very early on in his diaries, there's this extraordinary entry where he says, the play I'm working on is being damaged by my drinking. I know it is. I can't stop because my anxiety is so bad that if I stop, I'll go crazy. But I know it's affecting my work. It's affecting structure. It's affecting coherence. All those things did start happening later. But the play he's talking about is Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which is structurally perfect. So he knew, even at that early stage, that he was really on a very dangerous road. And I think his experience of just being Tennessee Williams, his experience of being Tom Williams, his experience of inhabiting his own body was so difficult for him that you can see where the drinking comes in, but the drinking made it a billion times worse.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'd forgotten that. I was about to ask you what play that was.
I couldn't believe it when I realized.
Yeah, and that's amazing that it was one of his classics, a relatively early play. I'd like to end by having you read a passage from your book. It's about your visit to Raymond Carver's grave. And
yeah,
if you can set it up a bit.
I will do. So at the very end of the book, I travel to Port Angeles. I spend some time there. The last thing I do before I leave is go to Raymond Carver's grave, which is just outside the town of Port Angeles. This is on the Olympic Peninsula, which is a very beautiful, mountainous piece of land on the Juan de Fuca Strait. Under a bench, I found the black metal box I'd heard about. I opened it and pulled out a Ziploc bag. Inside was a spiral-bound notebook. I squatted down on the grass and started reading. The sun was streaming through the trees in dusty shafts, stirrable as honey. It was a visitor's book, each entry written in a different hand. Gallagher used it the most, but there were also many letters from strangers and old friends. Some wanted to say how much Carver's writing meant to them, and others talked about addiction in tones that sounded as if they were speaking to a priest or an AA sponsor. Someone non-judgmental and sympathetic. Spending is an escape, just like alcohol, one read. We are all trying to fill that empty hole. Another. I started drinking, hard. If I can keep my head above water, hopefully I won't drown. I turned 23 yesterday. Tess had scribbled a reply to that one. Ray would say, have faith, grasp at straws, and go to AA. I was crying by then. Faith. In the end, recovery depends on faith, of one kind or another. Carver once said he didn't believe in God, but I have to believe in miracles and the possibility of resurrection. No question about that. Every day that I wake up, I'm glad to wake up. It's this faith that became explicit in his late stories, Cathedral, Errand, Intimacy, though there are traces of it in things he wrote much earlier too. It struck me then that by driving out to a writer's grave, all these anonymous, suffering strangers were putting their faith in stories, in the capacity of literature to somehow salve a sense of soreness, to make one feel less flinchingly alone. I thought of myself as a child, of how I became a reader because tracts of my life were unendurable. In 1969, 6 years before he got sober, John Cheever was asked by the Paris Review if he felt godlike at the typewriter. Perhaps you could read his answer as a delusion, the word Berryman scratched all through the proofs of his own interview. Perhaps it wasn't, though. Perhaps it could be taken at face value. No, I've never felt godlike. No, the senses of one's total usefulness. We all have a power of control. It's part of our lives. We have it in love, in work that we love doing. It's a sense of ecstasy, as simple as that. The sense is, this is my usefulness and I can do it all the way through. It always leaves you feeling great. In short, you've made sense of your life.
Olivia Lang, reading from her book, The Trip to Echo Spring, on Writers and Drinking. She spoke with producer Doug Gordon.